This is Outside the Round with Matt Barile, a Rage Rowdy podcast.
Hell yeah. Well, we have got an absolute legend here today. Very excited about this. Uncle freaking Cracker.
Oh, how you doing, shoot. My brother? Good, man. How are you?
Doing well.
Thanks for having me.
Dude, of course, man. We've been trying to do this for a little while, and we're very happy to get it all worked out, man.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, we had first met at the Loser's Birthday Bash back in September.
Okay.
I was the guy on stage kind of wrangling, doing the introducing and stuff. Yeah. And then we sat out there and you're like, man, nobody smokes anymore. And I'm like, I actually gave it up, but I'll still do it with you, Cracker. We sat out there and had a smoke together. We had Riley Green on that night and a bunch of good folks,
dude. It felt like a time you should be smoking, though, didn't it?
It did.
There are times where you feel like this deserves a cigarette.
This deserves a cigarette, or this deserves a cigar.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, it's one or the other. I've never heard anybody be like, this deserves a vape. Yeah, like, you wouldn't ever know he'd say
it's
that.
It's just not right. It just doesn't roll off the tongue right, dude. You got to throw it back, and it can't be digital all the time. You got to throw it back to the analog.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
You got to throw it back. So what have you been up to?
Play the old shit.
Yeah, play the old shit. So what have you been up to so far recently, dude?
Recently, I haven't really been up to much. I wish I had like a whole list of things I've been up to, but it's same old for me. I just been up to, I put a new record out not too long ago.
Coffee and beer.
Yeah. So I guess I'm up to that. I only got a handful of shows left for the year. Thank goodness. But other than that, not much. Playing birthday parties, bar mitzvahs, name it.
Oh, hell
all
yeah.
of it, man.
We love a good
fairs,
bar.
Funnel cakes and corn dogs.
Love a good bar mitzvah, bro. I grew up in New York. I didn't grow up of the Jewish faith, but bar mitzvah season, you in the fall, it's like bar mitzvah season or whatever.
That's
something in New York that I used to see. So tell me about Coffee and Beer, bro. 13 songs on that thing. First record in a while. What went into all that?
It had been a while, and It was weird because it wasn't like intentional either. Like I had done this thing where I had been on a record label for years.
Yeah.
And then I bought my record out and like ended up getting out of the record deal after 14 years.
Wow.
And put that record out, and then after that record, it was kind of not to bore you with like old divorce stories and things like that.
Tell us
like,
all about it.
A lot of like life shit happened, right? So I put out this record. I go through this divorce. Now all of a sudden, like I'm Mr. Momming it at home. I got kids. I got all this thing going on.
Yeah.
And things just happened, right? Like things happen. Kids were getting older and going to school. I was packing lunches, and it just was a. I still toured. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But there was no urgency to put out new albums, no new records, and we were just in a spot where we were, I don't know, everybody's always trying to figure out the social media thing, and I'm going back years, because it had been years since I had done an album.
Yeah.
But, so it was unintentional, and it wasn't like I just wasn't doing anything music related, I guess. Like I said, I was still touring, so that was music related, but there was no urgency or no anything. Like, for years I had been on a label. I was like, oh, time to new album. Time to do a new record. And that was it. But, like, once you get off a record label, it's like there's no one going, like, time to do a new one.
Yeah.
There was none of that. Manager, nobody. There was nothing. There was just no urgency. And I had some songs sitting around, and I was fiddling around. I started fiddling around. It was during the pandemic I started fiddling around with new stuff just out of sheer boredom.
You got a lot of time to do shit.
Oh, man. There was a lot of time there, wasn't there? What a bizarre couple. Well, I was in Michigan. I was in Detroit. I don't know where you were at during that time.
I was blessed to be down here.
Okay.
So I lucked out.
Yeah. A little more limber down here.
Just a little bit. It was fun, man. I got to tour a lot, too. I was out with a guy named Trey Lewis.
Oh, dope.
And that was when Dick Down in Dallas came out. I got to be a part of all that. And we ended up touring with Bobby for a little bit. And did a lot of touring during COVID. We were some of the only kids playing in the sandbox. And shit was wild out there, bro. Shit was wild.
Were you brumming up in places and people were just like, what are you doing?
You know where we... You know,
not opening doors and shit.
You know where we would go, actually? We'd go see your buddy Wild Greg.
Oh, man.
Down in Pensacola, Lakeland, Minneapolis, and Austin. We played all four of them. And one of the
forgot he had Austin.
He does. He has a spot down on 6th Street, and it is freaking wild. But one of Wild Greg's first stories, I've heard many Wild Greg stories, but he talks about the times he's had with you.
Oh, man.
Down there.
Well, I hope he doesn't say too much. Oh, yeah.
Greg's a wild man, dude.
He is. Although, and I've known him a few years now at this point, but he is a, they don't make him like him.
No, he's one of a kind.
But there are times where I'm like, am I going to get Wild Greg or am I going to get Mild Greg?
Yeah, there's two doses to Greg Urban, man. There are. There really are. And that's one of my favorite.
Is that his last name?
It is Urban. See, I was the tour manager, so I advanced all the shows. So I think I'm one of the few people, not to out you, Greg, but I'm one of the few people that does know his last name.
I'm so mad. All these years I haven't known his last name. And I love it. I love it.
Yeah,
Greg Urban.
Yeah, dude. And it's like you meet so many characters being out on tour. And you've been touring for... When did you first get on the road? I mean, back in the Brown Trucker days.
Yeah, yeah, so that was like back in I remember we set out in like 90. In fact, we didn't even put that first Kid Rock record out. And I say first Kid Rock record like the Atlantic release, Double Out of Cause. Before that, there was a lot of independent releases.
Yeah,
but I'll start from like the Atlantic release of his. We started on tour in like 90. Summer of 98, spring of 98, we went out on this Warped Tour, right?
Wow. Early Warped Tour.
Early Warped Tour. Album wasn't coming out for like 5 months. So we're playing these like, you know, we're playing the D stage, right?
Yeah.
There's an A, B, C, D. Like, we might as well have set up like in the parking lot.
Yeah.
But on our truck bed, right? But this is 98. So that's probably when I started like full on touring. Like we played shows around the Midwest for years, but it wasn't like touring. You know, we'd make a weekend out of it and come home and be like, oh, this touring is something, right?
Weekend warrior shit in the van, bro.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Come home like you just fought a war. You know,
and you got no idea what's ahead of you.
No, no clue. But then this Warp Tour was like rock and roll boot camp, right? Yeah. Like I'm talking, you know, it's $100 a show, and you got to be there by like 8 a.m. or something to load in, and just a whole mess. But we were doing 6-7 nights a week.
Wow.
For years. From that point, it was like, I swear, that Devil Out of Cause record, we probably did 6 or 7 nights a week for almost 3 years straight.
Yeah, it's insane. One of the most, and so I was born 95, so I missed that chapter. But luckily, I can, with the way the internet is, you can go back and watch stuff on YouTube. Probably the most epic beginning of a set in history. The Woodstock 99 intro, when you guys are out there doing that elongated intro. Did you guys do that kind of intro before every show? Was that kind of how it was, introducing the band?
Everything Kid Rock did was a fucking spectacle, right? It was like, he's a showman, man. He's a showman. You've seen some of the shows.
Oh yeah. Even to this day, man, I don't know how he does it at his age. He still flies around.
He puts 110% into everything when it comes to, especially live shows. I gotta be honest, his work ethic is unmatched. I'm positive that nobody works harder than he does. Like that motherfucker is in the studio at 4 a.m.
Yeah, he has it in his house where he can just grind.
And he grinds every day. And he has since I've known him, right?
Yeah.
He's just in the studio. He's always doing something. And even the way he writes songs, he already has the stage. He already has like how it's going to look on stage while he's writing the song. Yeah. I don't think that far ahead when I'm writing songs. I'm like, well, that sounds good, right?
That rhymes.
Right? But him, he already knows what the lights are going to do. It's insane, right? Like there's different, oh, my bad.
You're good.
You know, there's different cats that do different things, and he's definitely a different cat.
Yeah.
He's good at what he does.
Yeah, what do you remember from that Woodstock 99 day? Because it was hot. My uncle was there. My uncle went to college in upstate New York. And him and his friends, he was like in his 20s. And he said that it was the wildest weekend of his life.
That was probably like, Randall Island or something up there?
No, it was not even on, I think it was on an airstrip.
Well, there was one of them too. There was some of them, like Asbury Park. I'm trying to think of like up in East Coast-ish. which upstate New York.
Because, yeah, it was just that day because that crowd was just epic, dude. And Bob comes out in the mink coat and it's like in the summer. And I'm like, what is he doing walking out in that? It's like got to be like 100 degrees out there.
But he nails it every time, right? Yeah. It just every intro is the Woodstock intro was a little bit longer. It was probably longer than it should have been.
But it was a moment, dude. That's a moment that'll stick around forever, man. That's probably one of the most watched videos from that weekend.
It should be, though, because it was probably the coolest one out of that entire weekend. We had so Woodstock was at a period. It was at we had just come home from Europe. Like, I think we landed like the night before. There was a lot going on at that time, right before that Woodstock show. Like, the album had went like, and I'm talking Devil Out of Cause, went, like, double platinum. This thing was selling probably 120,000 copies a week, and there was no end in sight. Like, they, you know, labels, they collect all the data, right? They know where this thing's going before anybody else does. And so this thing was going, like, they knew how many millions this thing was going to sell, but we had just come home from Europe where we had gotten a single, we'd been touring for a while now, and we just got up to, like, you know, we ran through every circuit, and then, the next tour was, we were leaving clubs and theaters and then going to Europe for a month and some change and doing like back to like shithole clubs again, but then from Europe back to the US and going into arenas. So this was like this whole, like, there was no break. This was all, there was managers being fired. There was all kinds of things going on at the time. And we had left Europe, come back, Woodstock. Oh, and we were going from Woodstock to New York to do the MTV thing with Run DMC and Aerosmith for the award show there. Like, I just remember that. I do remember that. It was like a week where there was like all kinds of cool shit going on in it, right? But intense. Everything was intense. It was Woodstock especially. It was a complete shit show. Yeah. Mess. But it was awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm going back to like when you asked like what I remember about that. I remember all these things happening around the same time, and we're backstage at Woodstock. I remember going and look out to peek out into the crowd. And I'm like, fuck, I'm not going out there. Normally you kind of like peruse, see what's happening out there. Not that one. I just looked out and I was like, there's no way. But backstage, there's like Wyclef Jean's walking around. Puff Daddy's walking around. Ooh, can I say Puff Daddy?
Yeah.
Puff Daddy's walking around.
In that era, there's just everybody that's everybody was at one festival. All fucking genres, dude.
It was insane. Remember Vern Troyer, the guy from...
The guy from The Doors?
Mini-Me? From... was it Austin Powers, the movie?
Oh, he was there too? Yeah, so him and Joe C were in the same place.
That's right. So I remember Joe C was all upset. Like, who's this motherfucker?
There was another little guy there?
Yep. He was infuriated. He was infuriated by this. This was like a whole...
And then Fred was there stirring stuff up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Dude,
everybody, DMX.
Yeah, man, it was insane time. It was that Woodstock was something else. People were just throwing acid all over the place. It was crazy.
It was a different time, dude. And you've gotten to experience that time. And your music has stood the test of time. And so has Bob's. And, like, to be a part of that generation from coming up on, like, 25 years. What do we got? Like, 25 years since Follow Me, Bro.
Yeah.
Like, it gets wild. So you've gotten to see the change from that era of the late 90s and then 2000s, the entire TRL era to now the streaming era and the social media era. And... it's wild, man.
It's nuts to watch.
You've got to see it all.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the complete dismantling of, like, physical copies of music.
Yeah, going to FYE or Tower Records and getting a CD.
That was the jam back then, man. When I was a kid, well, what did you say, 95?
95.
See, I don't know if you've even hit that. good Lord, 95.
I remember going in and getting like some CDs. Like some of my first CDs were like Kenny Chesney, No Shoes, No Shirt, No Problems. That was one of my favorite records.
So
and
you
then,
got to like save I up your go money, go and yeah. buy the record and the
yeah, Metallica and Justice for All, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Stadium Arcadium. You Thank know, God. I got to do some stuff. Nickelback, All the Right Reasons.
You get to open it and you get to pull the sleeve out and read everything.
Look at all the songs, the notes that the artist would leave in there for the fans. There'd be a little secret hidden message about a tour or something like that, dude.
And now that just doesn't even exist. No. Like, it's not even, I feel bad for my kids that they don't, they'll never experience that.
Yeah. How old are your kids?
So I have 5.
Oh, wow.
Right? Yeah, I know. It's hard to say that.
Pop a cracker.
It's yeah. It's hard to say. I do have one grandkid.
Wow. Congrats. That's awesome.
But it's tough to tell somebody you have 5 kids without feeling like a hamster. You know, like you're like, I got 5 of them. You know, you're like, what? You got 5 kids. Just, it's a lot of kids.
Yeah.
And, But I had 3 daughters with an ex. They're 25, 24, 20.
Okay.
And then I have 2 boys with my wife now, 8 and 4.
Wow.
Once you explain it, it calms it down a little bit.
Yes.
With me, not with you. So it ranges from 25 down to 4 and 3 girls, 2 boys. So the boys will never experience being able to walk into a store and buy the
girls record. Got to experience it a little bit.
They did. Yet now you just like you click on it and you're like, did I buy it? Like you don't even know if you bought it.
It just plays. It's crazy, dude. It's a different world. What any of them into like really into music?
I mean, maybe a little bit. Like not. Thank goodness they're not. They're not like in a band or have started one or. They've all like dabbled with it. Like, I like music, you know, like I think I want to sing and I want to do this. And and I've just always been like, with my kids. I'm like, you know, whatever they want to do. Right. If they want to do, as long as they're happy doing
it's the way it should be, dude.
I mean, yeah, I just you hope that your kid will pick a path that you could maybe help them with.
Yeah.
Or not, I guess. But something you might be able to help with, you know, as long as you know you can help with something, it's a good feeling. But if you can't, like, you know, the one kid wants to be a tournament, I'm out. Like, I know nothing about school, college, any of that stuff. Like, I can't help them in any of those areas.
Yeah. So you, how young were you when you started getting on this music thing? And because you were in the Detroit scene, right?
Yeah.
A great scene to be in all the time, but in the 90s, especially 80s, 90s, Detroit, there was some cool shit coming out of there in all different genres.
It was. That was back, like, remember, like the ICP days and Esham, like the, what they call it, like horrorcore? They call that like horrorcore rap or.
Yeah.
They had some kind of name for it, right?
And there's a it's name in one of those documentaries somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I signed my first record deal when I was 15.
Wow.
So going back that long, I think I was in the studio as early as 12, I think. Going on 13. I would go down to Detroit in like 8 Mile and Van Dyke, there was a studio, and I'd go in there with my little 8-track. I'd have my little Tascam and plug in.
Yeah.
Cuz I had a beat made up and ready to record. But I was probably 12 going on 13, you know, when I started like studioing it.
Wow.
But 15, my first record deal, that lasted like a year and a half. I remember going to like other studios and like couldn't record because the president of the label owed the money.
All
the
politics,
like, yeah. All the bills, you know.
Yeah.
That's when I figured out first. That was my first taste of like the music business.
Yeah, and so this is all you've real. This is what you've known. This has been your life,
pretty much. Music. I mean, pretty much. I mean, I grew up in a gas station, so it was music. I mean, what you listen to it all day in a gas station. If you work in a gas station, there's a radio playing all day.
What station was it on for you?
Well, it was classic rock at the gas station. But if you went back to like the office, if it was my dad's area, it was always Motown or like Conway Twitty, Patsy Cline.
Old school country. Yeah. Storyteller shit.
Mm-hmm. You were either jamming through the garage or you'd get to the back and it'd be all sappy and weird with my dad back there, right? Just being
But that, I think, explains a lot of where you're, because people talk about right now there's a lot of genre blending and folks kind of doing everything. I feel like you were one of the early guys to be doing that. Like, you have songs that go in so many different lanes, and I think that goes back to what you're saying, growing up listening to a little bit of everything, you
to
know?
Everything, to all of it, to not limit There shouldn't be any limits.
No.
Music of all things, I don't think there should be limits, you know, I mean, but I guess, you know, the gatekeepers have to keep, they have to keep a lid on it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why Van Morrison always ran around so mad, because they started labeling stuff, and, you know what I mean, he wasn't mad for any other reasons. Well, there's probably a few, but.
Probably a few.
I just remember that being his big, that was his big gripe, like, just they start labeling things, you know, just figuring out different ways to package and sell things, and, but that has to be done too, I guess, you know, in order to, but how far it's come just to give it away now these days, it's a whole different, like, you know, 20 something years ago versus today. Like, you just give it away for free. Like, here, have this music.
Yeah. It's so much of the artist money is made on, and the artist's like payment to be able to pay the team. Cause you have to, there's so much of a team involved is doing those shows.
Absolutely.
Is selling your merch, and it's knowing the right shows to take. There's some where it's a great paycheck, but then there's some where like you're early on, like taking opportunities that are going to grow your career. And then other ones that are just gonna be like, I can't miss out on this shit. Like,
absolutely.
I gotta go and do it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You gotta, you have to do those things too, you know, but it's not all, oh man, but early on days were the, those were the tough ones, you know, where the bar tab exceeded the guarantee and, you know, this thing is, or
settlements are always funny,
oh,
getting paid.
Like, where is that bar owner? You know, when the show's, he's nowhere to be found.
Oh, he dipped out of 10. He dipped out when you all got up.
How come I going to get to Cincinnati with no dough, right?
Yeah.
How the merch, how them shirts looking?
Man, dude. So this album, so Coffee and Beer, was there, it's like, it has like the summer soundtrack kind of feel. And I think releasing it when you put it out, because it was back in like June, July area, right?
It was, and it's got a, and that wasn't by design or anything either. I think it was just more of a, I just like feel good stuff anyway. So, yeah. One of the hardest things to do for me as a songwriter is writing a non-dumb up-tempo song.
A non-dumb up. You want stuff that's like mindless and people can just vibe to, right?
Yeah. Something if you, to do like a fun up-tempo song that isn't dumb, is one of the toughest things for me to write.
Yeah.
Maybe not for other people, right? This is just for me. You know, if I start something and it's up tempo and it's fast, I'm always like, that's dumb. You know, like, but I'll get stuck on it or something like that.
Yeah.
So slow and sappy is easy, right? But up tempo and fun for me is hard.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I don't get it. But it's definitely the reason why I don't have a lot of up tempo songs.
Yeah.
I kind of keep it mid tempo, laid back, just something easy. Like, I like easy just because I'm a. I think I'm just easy.
Yeah, right? But you hear that in songs like, and it's worked out well for you with like Follow Me and Smile and so many of your other songs are, it's that laid back vibe, and people need something to jam out to on the boat. People need something to sit on the beach and put their feet in the fucking sand and just kick back.
For
you know?
Sure.
And I think you've been the soundtrack to a lot of people's lives, man.
Listen, if I'm on somebody's boat and, well, I'm on somebody's boat, I hope it's just my record, right? Just not knocking anybody or their boat. I have a hard time going on other people's boats.
You have a hard time? Why is that? Just because you used to being on yours, or?
Well, once you like hop on somebody's boat, like you're there. Like you're, you know,
there's
what
no
I mean?
Exit strategy, no Irish goodbye.
No, yeah, you can't. Yeah, there's just.
You gotta jump out, fucking swim.
You're stuck, and most boaters are like out for the remainder. Like there is no coming. You know what I mean? Like they find their spot, and they're like, "We're just gonna go out to, we're gonna post up at you know Munchies Bay over there," and you're like, "Oh, cool." And then you're thinking, "What time do you think we're gonna like eat or something?" Like it's just booze, and it's all good, and it's all fun, but it's nice to be on your own stuff.
It's a full investment.
It is. Yeah, it's a commitment.
So are you more of a lake, hang out on the lake guy, Michigan guy, or are you more hang out by the beach and hang out with like the Chesney kind of vibe where you're like on a fucking island and stuff?
The island's nice because you don't have to be on the water stuck anywhere. I mean, I'd rather be stuck on an island than a boat, I guess,
okay.
Right? Or, but I don't know, that's six in one, the same, that's Right?
Because the lakes in Michigan, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like summer in like Michigan, Ohio, Wisconsin, Minnesota.
You know? Yeah, those are all like great, like, whoa, bass fishing's like top notch.
You big fishing guy?
I love fishing. Smallmouth, walleye, muskie.
That was a wild Greg story too, by the way. He invited me. Has he told you about St. Gregory?
The island?
His island is St. Gregory or whatever. I haven't been up there.
I have not either.
He told me that he got the walleye limit was like X amount. He's like, I caught 65. And I'm like, what do you, Greg, that's not a lot. He's like, oh, St. Gregory is sovereign land. This is my land. It's equidistant between Minnesota and Canada. I could do whatever I want. I'm like, oh God, Greg. But he's a big walleye guy.
That's a Minnesota. Yeah,
I've never had walleye. Do you eat it?
Yeah. You got to be careful with walleye. Walleye are fun to catch because they're huge. They can be huge.
Oh.
Fun to catch, but you got to be careful if you're fishing for walleye. You'll rip their lips off if you pull too hard.
Shit.
So that's the only.
It's not like bass where you can just fucking.
Yeah, just
it.
Nail them, right? Just. But walleye are different, like, because you have to lay into them, but you got to be careful how hard you lay into them.
Yeah.
Also, you don't want to rip the lips, right?
No.
you don't want to be ripped. but they are fun to catch. And growing up in Detroit, we had Lake St. Clair. We had the Detroit River, too, in spring. You could go jig the Detroit River in the spring. Kind of gross, though, you know, because they're spawning. All the walleye are coming up river and they're spawning. So you're catching these massive, like, walleye, but they're just, like, dripping. And it's just, it's gross, right?
Okay, so you need a glove or something.
Yeah. Or just don't touch them. It's gross. Yeah. But they're fun to catch, though, man.
Hell yeah, dude! That's awesome. So, were you out with Kenny this year?
I was out with Kenny this year.
How was that?
It was a blast. It was all stadiums.
That's like what he does, man. He's been doing that for decades now.
And he does it so like effortlessly. Like I get up in a stadium, I'm like, where the F am I here, right? Like, what's going on? There's, like, zero intimacy at all, right? It's not like I'm like, you get up there, you're like, man, I missed that shitty little club I was playing last night, right? But the stadium's like, it's fun, right? It's fun, but there's zero intimacy. You have zero control. Like, you have none, and you know it. Like, you know, that's just how massive these stadiums are, and, like, you're just in the middle of, like, this big... You just have no control. And that's weird, right? But Kenny does it. Like, I don't know, man. He just looks like he just has everything on lock. Like, he could just direct.
And his crowd understands the stadium thing. Like, they do the sandbar thing up in the front. Like, it's the Nation is a vibe, dude. And whenever that show comes to a city, it's the biggest tailgate day of the year.
It's funny you said that. We were talking about that not too long ago, how Kenny, like, his fans and his followers, they're all, the amount of fun them people have when they're going to a Chesney show is, because I'll go, like, during those shows, I'll go out into the parking lots and see who's doing what.
I love that, bro. I love that.
So fun. And the people, like you were saying, though, they have a thing. There's a sandbar into this, and only, like, they know it. Like, it's not like... It'd be different, like, if you went to, like, Pink Floyd or something at a stadium, right? It's not the same as, the Kenny Chesney fan going to the stadium. They just have this whole, like, Jeep owners. Like, they just have these waves and these nods. Like, even these Chesney fans, like, they got, like, secret handshakes and shit.
Yeah, people bring, like, RVs like it's a NASCAR race or something, dude.
It's
like,
pretty,
They tailgate like no other.
They have it on, they have it. There's people that have RVs just for the Chesney shows, like, all year they're paying on these RVs just to go to the for the weekend. But I get it, man. Shit's expensive out there, hotel rooms.
And then you can't get a DUI if you're fucking staying overnight on the grounds.
Nope.
You just stay in the parking lot, get up the next morning, drive home hungover.
Concept
in the Winnebago. It's
crazy concept.
How do you keep yourself fresh after all these years of doing it? Like, what advice would you have for somebody getting started to have the longevity that you've had, whether it's in the music career, just the physical part of it? Like, you've been doing this shit for a long time. How do you not get burnt out and continue to do what you're doing?
I know I have been burnt out plenty of times.
Yeah?
Yeah. And, I've been really, really lucky at Shit, just about everything I've done, I've been pretty lucky. So as far as advice would go to anybody else new starting out, the only thing I would say to anybody doing it or starting out is just to make sure you love what you're doing. You know, there's been plenty of times I hated what I was doing, but I for the most part, I loved what I've done, you know, over the years. But just to keep it fresh and to keep it different, you have to be making things that you dig or you like, yeah, or things that otherwise there's no way you could keep a smile on your face, you know, yeah, if you weren't. I've been really, really lucky, like I said, and that helps too, you know, like when they play your songs and things like that, those are things that keep you going, you know, those definitely I don't know, it all keeps you on your toes a little, yeah, bit, but.
And your fan base growing with you. Like, there's guys and girls that have been with you since they were teenagers or in their 20s, watching on stage with Bob, to seeing when Follow Me comes out, to now still riding with you almost 30 years later, dude.
It's so awesome to see those same folks. Like, there'll be, there's people I see, like, there's so, when I was DJing for Kid Rock, obviously I'm in the back.
Yeah.
So over the years, I've seen so many, like, diehard Kid Rock fans, where they be, where they'd be like, you know, first in the door, you know, they might have sat there all night to get in there first, but run to the very front and perch up and just, oh, yeah, sit there, right?
We call that front row or don't go. That's Ray's Rowdy scripture. We're front row or don't go. Front row, don't go for the side, don't go for the side stage, for the main stage. Like, people getting in there and getting your spot.
Front row, don't go. I love that.
If you're in the front of like a shed or an arena or a stadium, there's not much in between you, so it creates that intimacy as a fan to the show. Absolutely. Versus being up in the 300s.
Absolutely. Oh yeah, then there's nothing.
Yeah.
You know, there's no. There are things you do see from up there though, but maybe not at the top of the hill, but maybe the top of the seats.
Yes.
Which is probably like almost halfway through.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I remember seeing a Run DMC show when I was a kid in the. I was at the pretty much the top of the seats, you know, the, yeah, amphitheater. So right when the roof stopped and the hill started, I was still under the roof. But I just remember, and at the time, the big thing was like Beastie. This was back in like '87, probably. Pine Knob, Detroit.
Oh, I love Pine Knob. We did that with Bob. Great.
Oh,
fucking,
yeah.
Great fucking venue.
And it's just as shitty now as it was then. Like,
it has character.
That's what
character.
I mean. Like, it is.
Yeah.
These places, you could tear them down and build a new one, would never be the same. You can't match.
Gotta have the character. That's how I feel as a Yankees fan about old Yankee Stadium versus new Yankee Stadium. I like the old one better. There was something about pissing in a trough in the bathroom. Yeah. There's something about that energy of the ninth inning when Jeter's coming up with two outs and the stadium is shaking. I'm sure you feel that way being like, absolutely, being like a Tigers fan or being a Lions fan, those old stadiums.
I miss Tiger Stadium. I miss it like dearly. Yeah. Although I bought, they were tearing down old Tiger Stadium.
Oh, did you buy the memorabilia?
Yeah, like the seats and stuff, right? Well, I was like, at the time, I was like, my grandpa was this huge Detroit Tigers fan. Yeah. We all were, but not like my grandpa was.
Yeah.
So you could buy these seats in like 2-4 sets. Yeah, of the, yeah. You know, the actual seats.
Yep.
And they just ship them to you or whatever. You go online. So anyway, so I bought my grandpa 4 of these things, and I'm like, I don't know what the fuck he's going to do with 4 of these seats, right?
Like, he can only sit in one of them at a time.
Right, I don't know. But I just felt like I needed to get him something from this stadium. Then I was like, but I need 4 too. So I bought myself 4, right? So my uncle needs 4. I bought him 4.
You bought like a whole section.
Bought more than I should have, right? And not one of these guys used any of these fucking seats, right? Probably sitting there. Well, my grandpa, he's not with us anymore. But so anyway, so I buy these things. And they package them, you know, obviously they rip them off the floor and they package them at that stadium downtown Detroit. They ship them home. Well, I had a separate garage. And so when they got there, I was like, oh, just throw them in that garage, you know, and they threw them in the garage. A couple of days go by, I go out in there and I walk out into the garage. There's this fucking rat like this big. Like, he came with the stadium. Like, yeah, he was in a box or something when he came out. So this thing had gone through the entire garage. Went through it. Anything in there that was in, I think there was some snowmobiles in there. He ate all the wiring to these things.
Shit.
He was just, it didn't take him long. He was doing his thing. Anyway, I don't even know what made me talk about rats.
Came with the stadium.
Came with the stadium, and then we were talking about the
old place.
The vibe.
Yeah, the vibe. The vibe of just those old stadiums and those old arenas in Pine Knob.
Pine Knob, I just remember it was probably 87-ish, and I remember at the time Beastie Boys were huge, the first record,
dude,
right?
What I would have given to go to have gone to see those guys, dude. One of my favorites, being a New York guy, them being from Brooklyn, dude.
They in 87, they were as fun as you could possibly see a show, right? Yeah. Like, I remember I saw them at the Fox Theater, saw them at Pine Knob, saw them at the State Theater. I'm going back when, like, they had the big dick come out of the middle of the stage.
Yeah.
Like, the show ended with this big explosion, and this box in the middle of the stage that said Beastie Boys on it the whole time exploded, and then this big dick just rises up. And goes all the way up. So, like, the show's over. They're gone. But things are still going on a stage. And everybody's, like, looking. And all of a sudden, you're looking. You're like, wait a minute. It's a big cock in the middle of this stage, right? Like, thing was enormous, right? This is filled the entire...
the fucking Beasties, man.
Just giving people what they want, right?
Yeah, it's a spectacle.
It was a spectacle. But what I witnessed, like, halfway through on that Run DMC show... at the time, I don't know, I said the Beastie Boys, because White Castle was a huge thing. They gave out these free hats. So there was all these White Castle hats flying around in the air at the time. And I just remember somebody launched a hat, and I seen the hat start from one spot, and it was going, like, right for Run. And while Run was rapping, he, like, did this thing and, like, just stuck one hand up, grabbed the hat, and he was like, nice throw, and threw it back. Like, he got the...
Wow.
These are just things you witness when you're not... up front. Like, if you were up front, you wouldn't have caught the way that should
be. Yeah, having that aerial kind of view,
mm-hmm.
that wide pan shot, that's cool.
Yeah, but those types of things, you know, you see are fun. You still don't feel like you're involved in it all, but
And there's something about being in, like, the bleachers at a baseball game, and, like, the crowd is just a little bit different. Like, the people in the lawn, man, that's the party section, man. I knew the sheds that I grew up going to were Bethel Woods, up near where the original Woodstock was.
Yep.
And then PNC Bank Arts Center in Homedale, New Jersey, bro. And it's like, those are, like, being on the lawn up there is just, it's special. It's a vibe.
Yep. Those are the PNCs, and those are reminiscent of the Pine Knobs and the...
Yes, very similar. Yeah. Or like a Jones Beach, which I'm from New York, but I never went to Jones Beach.
No?
I never went to... Long Island was a pain in the ass. I grew up on, like, the other side of the city, so it would take, like, 3 fucking hours to get there. So it's like, why go there when I can just go to Jersey? And there's something about a concert in Jersey. Those folks, man, Jersey's... just like Detroit, Michigan have character.
You don't hear Jersey's too many people say character. That, though. You don't hear a lot of people say that, like...
The Jersey has character?
Well, they definitely have character.
Yes.
I love Jersey, but you don't hear people say, like, there's nothing like Jersey.
There is. Right? Like, dude, every state has its own little thing, and that's, like,
I'm just going to run over here to Secaucus and do it.
Yeah, dude. I'm just going to hop on a train in Secaucus and just see what kind of shit I see.
Did I say that wrong? It's Secaucus?
Secaucus. Or Secaucus. Tomato, tomato, you know? You say it however
I just remember early on having to stay in Secaucus. Well, it was expensive to stay in the city. So we kept the tour buses over in Secaucus.
Yep, yeah.
At the Howard Johnson.
Yep.
Which is probably doesn't exist anymore, I'm sure.
The old school.
Yeah.
That's what's cool, too, about being on tour, and you've gotten to go to so many different places. What have been some of your favorite spots? Like, is there something special about being in Michigan? Is there something special about West Coast, East Coast? Like, where do you feel like your big pocket and big markets have been?
The funny part about, there's weird pockets I do better at than others, like Boston. Places I do better, like in Boston and Indiana and Charleston and these other places than I do in Detroit even. You know, like, there's other... It's fun to go through all these cities, especially if you have time, if you're hanging out. Like, it's funny to listen to people talk when you, like, belly up at a bar. If you're in, pick a city, and you're in there for a Friday night, you go belly up at a bar and you talk to people and you're like, what goes on around here? People are always like, man, there ain't shit goes on around here. Like, nobody ever says anything cool happens in their own spot, their own hometown, right? Everybody's like, man, nothing goes on here. At the same time, I have a blast everywhere I go. Yeah. Right? It's like, what do you mean nothing goes on here? We're not doing, like, what's going on here? It's just funny to hear people talk and the way they, like, dog their own shit. Like,
because I think once you get outside of it, you appreciate it. Like, growing up, I wish that the city, it would leave Yankee Stadium in the Garden and then it would float away to England, because it was just chaos. It was expensive. The traffic, the this, the that, whatever, politics, all that shit. And I was like, I'm cool with the city going away and leaving me Yankee Stadium in the Garden. But now that I've been down here for 6 years, I'm like, it's one of the greatest cities in the world. You have every kind of culture there. There's always something to do. It's like one of the meccas.
You miss it?
I do, man. I just went home for, it was funny. It sucked because it was the game that they lost, but I was at game 5 of the World Series for the Yankees. And it was, but it was still.
Did Fat Joe come out on that?
Fat Joe came out game 3. Jinxed us then. He came out and sang, and his ears were off. It was a whole nightmare. We were winning. Game 5 had 3 home runs. I brought in an Italian combo. I threw at Yankee Stadium, when somebody hits a home run, you throw shit up in the air. It's just what you do. So I snuck in an Italian combo, and I'm like, somebody's getting hit with slime. Just tossing stuff in the air. So I threw the Italian combo from right field. It was fucking awesome. Garrett Cole's pitching a no-hitter through 4. They put Fat Joe up on the screen. And then immediately we have that inning where we have the 4 errors. We give up the lead. Cole comes out with no earned runs. And we end up losing the game and losing the World Series at home. But it was just electric. Like, that was my last time going home, and that was pretty recent. But there's something special about when you don't appreciate something until you move away, and then you go home and you're like, man, this place fucks. Like, I like this joint.
There's probably a lot of things out here that you don't have back home. Like,
a lot of it's food related, bagels, pizza, Heroes.
Like Italian markets here. Like back in Detroit, we had so many Italian markets.
You have so many different. Growing up in the city, like it's like. New York, you have every kind of culture. You can get every culture around the world in one place. Detroit is very similar to where you can get a lot of different cultures. You want soul food, you got it. You want Hispanic food, you got it. Obviously, Italian, German, Irish, a little bit of everything.
Shawarma, whatever. Name it, you got it.
Yeah.
It's just a little different here. Like, I can't find an Italian sub here to save my life. Like,
yeah, there's a couple good delis I'll tell you about off the air. There's some good spots. There's some cool little Italian markets because everybody's moving here, dude. We're in a city that is exploding. There's like 100 people a day moving here right now.
That's crazy.
Like, you're Detroit, I'm New York, she's California. It's like we're all from different spots, but we're all here because there's just an energy to Nashville.
Yeah, there is.
What's it been like being down here, dude? You've been down here for a little while now, right?
It's been almost a year and a half now.
Yeah.
But you're right. There's an energy. There's something other than nothing. You know, there's no
creativity, just excitement.
That is the other thing, too. You know, Yeah, there's all of that. There's action. If you want it, if you don't want it, you don't have to take it, obviously. But there's just action. There's something going on. People are being productive.
Yeah,
I see a lot of people still not being productive, but there's a lot of people being productive, just doing shit. Somebody just doing something. I mean, and maybe it was where I was at. I'm never bashed where I'm from. You know, I love Detroit. I love my hometown. I love all of it. But it was, the winners were brutal. It was time for 49 of them was enough. You know, winners. It was just it was not that Nashville doesn't have a winner, but it's way more forgiving.
Yeah, it is very forgiving, and it's just being able to watch kids come up and watch the energy of just artistry and songwriting, and it's like everybody down here is grinding towards something, and it's similar to that era you came up in Detroit.
Absolutely.
The 80s, 90s, there was a lot of cool shit happening, and it's like Nashville's that hub, dude. So it's cool to have folks like you down here, because it's like, even like some of the guys from Creed live down here, some of the guys from Three Doors Down live down here. Like there's people, you got fucking Daly, the King of Losers, hanging out there. Like, you've got Bob's down here. Like, there's so many big name people from the last 20, 30 years that are all flocking to this place.
It's because, like you said, like, just the, you know, just the creativity, the just being able to be that close to a city and a not city at the same time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, to be able to be 10 minutes from the city to take the action or not, or to see, like you said, just to see music, to see somebody new, somebody, something different, just, being able to do that, you can't do that in these other places anymore like you used to be able to.
No,
you
know? Dude. It's special, man. So what do we have looking forward to for 25?
Well,
isn't it crazy it's the year 2025? Like, where the fuck has the time gone, right?
Dude, tell me about it. It's like it goes faster the older
you
get.
It's starting to go faster. I turned 30 in January, so it's like I'm every day and every week it's starting to go by faster. I think I'm hitting that age where it's like shit just starts speeding up and you got to take time to enjoy it. But what do we have as far as next year? You put out a record for the first time in a while. Do we see like tour dates? Do we see just kind of back in the lab working on stuff or what?
No, I'll be touring. I'll be 25. I'll be touring. Probably don't have any special tours going on. Do I? Nothing like that. Just same. Same, like, just touring, promoting that record. Just touring.
Yeah.
That's it.
Do you have any artists that are, like, coming up right now that you're really enjoying watching in any genres of music? Or do you take a break from listening to music because you're creating it so much and you listen to, like, podcasts and sports and shit?
No, you know, I like that. There's a kid that plays at Bob's place named Dean James.
Oh, yeah. Dean puts on a show.
This kid is just incredible to watch. Like, just, you know, singing-wise, playing-wise. Like, he is just, like, he's dope to watch. And I wish I knew of more people like him to watch, you know, like, but I haven't, like, haven't dabbled, like, bounced around to see anything or caught anything like that. You have to give me a list.
Well, if you ever want to come out, we do a bunch of events. We actually do them we're part of, like, of the Steve Ford family.
Oh, nice.
So we do events. We did them for a while at Winners. Then we moved them over to Losers. Now we're over at Duck Blind, the new bar that Steve and Riley have over there in Midtown. So we do events every Sunday, every Wednesday, every other Tuesday, all the up-and-comers. So if you ever want to come out and just take a look at what's kind of cooking in town, because we'll do some country stuff, we'll do some rock stuff, we'll do some stuff that's a little bit different, you know. We try to break the mold, so you're always more than welcome to come check out the kids and what's kind of coming, because there's new kids moving here every fucking day, dude. It's crazy. It's exciting.
Yeah, it is. I forget, I was up at Losers with Bob one night, and
you guys were having cigars. I remember that. We were doing the event next door, dude.
That's right.
That night was our rowdy alternative takeover. We had all the rock kids playing next door. We have there's this band called Frigga Five that's coming up right now. Young kids from Atlanta, and it's like new wave Incubus, Deftones kind of shit. And
really?
These kids are like 20 years old. They drove up in their van, came up and played, and they rocked it. Kid jumped over the stage thing. Before their set, he was seeing how far the mic would stretch out. And he ran around the whole fucking bar. 20-year-old kid. It's crazy.
What, Frigga Five?
Frigga Five. They're a kid band out of Atlanta. There's a lot of kids coming out. Silly Goose. Atlanta's like popping with rock shit right now.
Really?
And it's like 90s, 2000s style rock shit. Like stuff of your lane and Bob's lane.
That's good
really
to hear,
cool.
Man, because this just hasn't been any of it for years.
Dude, and it's like you have that scene, that world coming back. It's like we're living in 2002 right now, dude. It really is. It's like the Attitude Era of life, man. And there's all these bands coming back and the culture's shifting and changing. Your Detroit Lions are winning, bro. How we feeling about the Lions?
My goodness, man.
Blue and silver, how we feeling?
So nice to see them doing so good, man. Like, it's been years since I've seen anything out of that.
Yeah, like a winning team on Thanksgiving, bro.
It's like a whole different team.
Dan Campbell's the man, and he was part of that winless team, that 0-16 team.
Do you think, and I'm not a humongous sports dude, so it's doesn't baffle me, but does it make the most sense that, like, this Dan Campbell played for the Lions at one point?
Yeah.
Well, he's just a player in general. Doesn't matter who he played for, but is it because he was a player? Other players will listen to him more?
I think so, and I think he takes so much pride in the Lions organization because he was there when the team went 0-16. So he's like, I was here for the lowest point of this franchise with so many loyal fans that didn't give up on us, and I love this city. And he's brought that smash mouth because Detroit, similar to New York, there's northern cities where there's just an attitude and it's just a smash mouth, and you play with some spunk and some intensity, some tenacity to you. Pittsburgh has it too, like Philly has it, Boston has it, and he's bringing that out. And it's you see it in the way these guys play. It's fun to watch.
It is fun to watch. It is fun to watch.
Lions win a Super Bowl. You going to the parade? Would you go home for a Lions Super
absolutely.
Bowl parade?
I went home for this year for the first night of the season.
Yeah.
And just the stadium itself, like the inside walking around was so crazy.
Yeah.
It was like electric. It was just nutty how the vibe in that stadium that night when them Lions came out for the first night of the season. I haven't felt that in years.
Have you been to a Thanksgiving game?
I have. The last one, I've been to a couple of them. The last one I don't remember much of. It goes fast, right?
Yeah.
Just trying to get back home for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah.
Before everybody sits down, I mean, but.
Yeah.
Fun. Crazy how they still have it after all these years.
Yeah, it's the tradition.
I don't know what the never did figure out like why they got Thanksgiving.
I wonder if it's just the blue collar thing that Thanksgiving's like a big holiday and you have all the folks that work in the factories and the mills and the unions and all that that are off, so it gives them a day to go to the game. Wonder if that's it or if it's just.
But Detroit every year on Thanksgiving, like, yeah. Who struck that deal?
That's what I'm saying. I wonder if it, because it's Detroit and it's Dallas. That's the other one, because it's Detroit has the early game and then Dallas has the afternoon game. I get to watch my Giants fucking get blown out by the Cowboys. Every year we can't beat the damn Cowboys. We just got Tommy DeVito back. They call him Tommy Cutlets.
Even this year?
This year the Giants are playing the Cowboys. Yeah, Cowboys get a home game and the Lions get a home game every Thanksgiving.
Oh my God, it just dawned on me that Thanksgiving's next week.
Yeah, it is. It's fucking crazy, dude. Yeah. It's crazy.
See, maybe I'll go to the game.
There you go.
I'm thinking it's already over with.
No, it hasn't happened
yet. And I'm like, even this year? Like, I thought they played already and it was done.
No, it hasn't happened yet. And the team is 9-1. They're the Vegas. They have the Vegas odds to win the Super Bowl right now. They're the best team in football.
Really?
Detroit Lions. Yeah, they are.
I mean, I don't doubt it. Just watching them on Sunday. That's how much I'm not in. I don't with stats and things like that.
Dude, you have 5 kids. You're still doing the music thing. You're running your own damn business, bro. Yeah, it's tough to keep up.
It is tough to keep up. But I do know guys that are way busier than I am that could tell you like where they rank and who else ranks where. Yeah, and like,
you got a lot of shit going on, Cracker. Yeah. You got a lot of shit going on, dude.
I appreciate that,
dude. I appreciate the hell out of you coming on here, man. Thank you. And seriously, when we got the message that we could have you on the pod, we were like, really? Aww. Like, fuck yeah, we can get Cracker on, dude. Seriously, you've been the soundtrack for myself. Nikki T was supposed to be here today. He went home and like messed up his neck a little bit when he was in Pittsburgh, so he was going to get that looked at and checked out. So it ended up just being me today. But seriously, dude, it's an honor to have you on this podcast and to have you in the Raised Rowdy family. And we really appreciate you, man, and excited that you've got coffee and beer out, and that there's still music coming out, and that you've made timeless hits. Like, thank you for what you've done for music, and even kids like me, born in the '90s, born after some of your songs have come out, just something to go back and listen to, or something that reminds them of their parents, their uncles, family barbecues, all that shit, man. I appreciate it, Cracker. Seriously, dog.
Thanks for having me on here, man. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, of course, dude. Well, y'all be sure to go and check out Coffee and Beer if you haven't already. Look up our boy Uncle Cracker. Find him on the social medias and go check out the new record and be on the lookout for any tour dates might be popping up in 2025. And shout out to our friends from Surfside. Cracker, we're going to send you home with a 4-pack. This is vodka iced tea.
Dope.
It's our sponsor on Raised Rowdy. So shout out to Surfside. No bubbles, no troubles. And for more on us, visit RaisedRowdy.com. For my man Cracker, I'm Matt Barrill. This has been Outside the Round.
Been the kind for staying one place for too long. I ain't never been the best at saying I love you to a girl I love. Only got a couple tricks up my sleeve. They usually just